SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're live right here on Sports Grid. It is the early line on a Wednesday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh, joined by Donnie Wrightside. A ton to get to here this morning. DRS, how you feeling?
Feeling good. Good night, Major League Baseball. The only letdown for me of everything, Kevin, was actually the Philadelphia Phillies under 4.5 over the first five innings, which came down to a two-out base hit by Alec Bohm to push across that fifth run. Outside of that, outstanding. Can't wait for the show. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. Let's get it started.
No doubt about it. Strikeout props were twirling as well. Before we get to baseball and before we get to the NFL, some outside stories. Lead hour show today. Yesterday, we found out that Serena Williams will be retiring after the U.S. Open. The star of this sport, I would probably argue to you, men or women's side of it, Serena Williams looking towards retirement.
Yes, and good for her, right? A long, extended career, made millions upon millions of dollars, Kevin. She'll continue to make millions upon millions with advertising once she is retired. But I love this when athletes do this on the biggest stage. Don't surprise us when you get there. Don't lose your last match. Like, you know what? I think that was it here. Let us appreciate you. Like, go out there in, you know, Flushing, Queens, and have a standing ovation. Maybe you win a couple tennis matches here. But I love when we get a heads up on what's going to take place, because it turns into must-see TV. And rightfully so. Let the fans walk you off that court and send you off with a big time ovation.
Totally agree. What better place to do it than beautiful Queens, New York?
Right,
and again, an absolute icon. Yeah, an icon of the sport. No, not in the heart of the city, man. I
right
knew that that's where it was going. We are too early. We are too early to be having this type of slander. Here's another one, though, right up your alley. Cam Smith and Liv. The reports are that he's joining the Liv Golf Tour, a $100 million offer. I put the rumors label next to it, though, just because Cam Smith right now over at the FedEx playoff, they're asking him about it left, right, and center, and he's trying to provide the stiff arm to the best of his ability.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I think the caveat here is, like, the PGA Tour bans you once you, like, tee it up, not actually sign with the Liv Golf Tour. So if he works something out where he's going to get a couple extra tournaments in here to make big bank in this FedEx Cup standings here, that's an amazing pull. But he's the number two golfer in the world going to the Liv Golf Tour. And anybody out there goes, man, he's selling out for $100 million, you would too.
He will be, I don't know, five timesing his money by joining Liv.
This guy just made more than Debo Sandler
throughout PJ Tour. I mean, yeah, and this guy can't even run the rock, much less catch a football here. Now, let Debo Samuel's going to hold out and become a golfer?
Yeah.
I mean, do things start to do PGA Tour golfers start to sit in? I mean,
we
got
to
start.
Tony Finau, red hot, sits this one out. Give me more money.
I love that for Tony Finau. He absolutely deserves it. To shift things back towards the NFL, some Roger Goodell comments dropped. Roger Goodell speaking with a lot of force for a guy who has a lot of power to make decisions but seemingly has no interest in actually doing so. Offered up some commentary around Deshaun Watson, labeled his actions egregious, and said that the behavior was predatory, and talking about wanting to see a year-long suspension towards Deshaun Watson.
This is going to be incredible to watch, because the NFL is talking some really tough stances as if it's already set in motion that this guy's going to get one full year plus at this point. We'll see what happens. And also keep in mind, we don't know when the ruling is coming, Kevin. So here we go.
Somehow they are back to radio silent on that front. The radio audience is in the mix on a Wednesday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside of the early line on Sirius XM channel 159, making it happen here, following all the big stories, including a quarterback battle in Seattle. Geno Smith will be your preseason starter for week number one.
Yeah, and this is one of the only things that they let you in on during the NFL season, was these quarterback battles. When quarterbacks want to be the starter, typically that means a better game plan, because if you have Drew Lock and you have Geno Smith fighting it out who's going to be the starter, they like to give those guys, Kevin, equal opportunities to win the starting job. Is that a betting tipping point here in the preseason? We'll find out.
I'll tell you this right now. We'll take a look at their game one here against the Steelers in the preseason. Maybe game of the week if you're doing a preseason kind of approach to that. A lot of quarterback question marks for both those football teams.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that game. Major League Baseball headlines yesterday. Manny Machado walks it off for the San Diego Padres, and boy, did they need it. Juan Soto with a homer earlier in the game that snapped that scoreless streak for the Padres that felt like it was going on forever. This team was looking to close it out. Josh Hader, not good. Only two-thirds of an inning of work, three earned runs, struggling there, but picked up by his new teammate, Manny Machado.
Yeah, you can say Soto needed that night with a home run to finally break through. Manny Machado needed that home run to get back on the horse. But also, Josh Hader needed both of those guys, so we forget how bad he was once again in the ninth inning. Get it together, Josh Hader. You're supposed to be one of the stronger parts of that bullpen now. Doesn't look like it, and his ERA is ballooning on a day-to-day basis.
Certainly something we'll keep our eye on. One guy we had our eye on very closely for the beginning of this baseball season, even across the middle of the season, Shohei Ohtani. Yesterday, Shohei pitched, got the win, and hit a home run. And his odds to win AL MVP have never been longer.
Vladdy Jr., listen up here. This was exactly what was happening last year in these races with the MVP market, but it looks like they've settled on their favorites, and they're not giving in here at the FanDuel Sportsbook.
Looks like it's Judge's award to lose. Speaking of losing, the Yankees yesterday, 13 innings, no runs. What a disgrace. Mariners win that one in 13. 1-0. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back with you here on SportsGrid, taking a look at Rod Goodell's comments on Deshaun Watson. These felt pretty noteworthy, even though it feels like we are again operating without a timeline, despite the fact that we are a month away from this NFL season beginning. This feels substantial. Roger Goodell, when commenting on why the NFL is looking for a one-year suspension, at least against Deshaun Watson, labeled his actions both egregious and, quote, said that the behavior was predatory. Those are not soft statements. That's making a stance. That's stuff you cannot walk back. It's not trying to toe a line there at all, DRS. You and I have, I think, often felt like the NFL didn't really want to deal with any of this, trying to kind of wash their hands as much as they could. This is straightforward here from Roger Goodell. They even went as far as to say that in some of Judge Robinson's findings, they feel even more emboldened to push forward with this one-year suspension. A disagreement on her ruling in terms of the six games, but that was the interesting part of what Judge Robinson had put forward, saying that under the NFL's policy, Watson is guilty, for lack of a better exact phrase there. I view this as another sign that we are looking at a much longer suspension than just six games for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, they're not talking around it now, talking about the NFL here and Roger Goodell getting in front of a microphone and very sternly saying, like, yeah, the judge said exactly what we were thinking, where it was predatory and egregious, and this is definitely against a code of violations for the NFL. Now, in the past, Kevin, as we've known, Roger Goodell has been judge, jury, and executioner. So they said, all right, well, let's have a little bit better public favor here. We'll have a third-party arbiter come in and see what they can handle. Six games, unacceptable. Now, the one thing that I do find is quite, see where this leads, like, I would say, like, in the next 2 years when you're talking about the collective bargaining agreement and how we actually get these fines and also suspensions, is Roger Goodell didn't like and the NFL didn't like the way it turned out with this judge, right? Six games, that's ridiculous. So I'm going to appoint another person who we've used before, which is Peter C. Harvey, a former New Jersey attorney general, who has, ruled favorably in the NFL's opinion. What happens if he takes this? Because, it's 10 games. Like, why doesn't Roger Goodell, for me, just say, this is mine. I know we didn't agree to this at this point, but, what I say basically goes here. The league where I run, basically behind the owners, they tell me what to do, but certainly I'm the front man on that. Why didn't he just take over this one, Kevin, and say, we're not even going to another third-party arbiter. It's going to be a year-plus suspension. I'm hearing it, and that's exactly what's going to take place. If you don't like it, next CBA voted out, but we're taking a hard-line stance on this one. But it seems to me like this is one of those shoe-ins, right, Kevin, where you say, look, I appointed this guy. We've already let it be known. Six is unacceptable. We want a year. I would find it interesting, to say the least, if this next guy comes up and goes, yeah, 7 games. 8 games at this point. I think it's going to be a year or longer, and the NFL is acting matter of fact like it's going to be a year or longer.
Which, again, I think puts the floor at what? 10 games? Right now, I think
it's more.
Kind of,
yeah. Sure. I think it's at least 12. At least 12 games. I do. I really do.
It's interesting. It works in increments, though, right? I don't feel like I've ever heard anybody say a 14-game suspension.
11
right?
games.
Like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, we are either going to do 6, 8, 10, 12, the full year, right? That's kind of where it explodes. I don't know if the NFL cares about this at all. Probably not. If it is a 12-game suspension, he misses the trip back to Houston. I don't know if they care about that at all. I'm not saying that they want him to go back to Houston. I'm wondering if they would rather not have Deshaun Watson play, you know, in Houston. Maybe they think it would be bad. Here's the thing. Let's say it is a 12-game suspension. They land on a double up and a big financial fine ultimately towards Watson. You know, the win total right now sits at 8.5. When the news initially came out, it was a 9.5, and it started to get juiced to the under. The NFL appealed. It went to an 8.5. It's now an 8.5 with -120 to the under. If we do 12 games, it does feel like we're going to at least a flat 8. A 7.5. This is what I'm saying, Donnie. If they do suspend Watson for the length of this season, it looks like the Browns are going to be booked closer to bottom feeder status, to be honest with you, in the scope of the NFL. I think there could come a time where we look at the rest of this roster plus Jacoby Brissett and maybe say the things have jumped a little too far. But at the moment, things are angling towards an under and a dropping win total on the Cleveland Browns.
Yes, it is. And I'm glad you brought this point up, because there comes a certain time, Kevin, where you say, okay, nobody's really hot on the Browns. You don't want to take the Cleveland Browns over right now because you don't really know where we stand. You could have Deshaun Watson out for the full 17-game slate. You actually could have this guy who's going to make a ruling, say, all right, 6 games was fair. We'll bump it to 8, and then you get an extra, 9 games on the slate that you might have Deshaun Watson, where you're factoring in there might be a chance that you don't get for any games in 2022. But there comes a time where value is in the eye of the beholder. You say, now, wait a second here. The Cleveland Browns, this is a completely different. Well, we've seen bad football teams, right? The Jets, the Detroit Lions, the Houston Texans, the Jaguars. There's two things that come into play here. Number one, most of those teams, Kevin, they were tanking for a purpose. Hey, we need a new quarterback. We haven't found our guy yet. The roster is not ready. There's no point in winning now. Let's see if we can lay a foundation, win 3 games, move on, get a top 3 draft pick, and see if we can get our guy for the future. The Cleveland Browns aren't built like that. And just because Deshaun Watson sits this season out, they're not tanking this season. That defense has a lot of studs and superstars on it ready to get after it. That offensive line is big, mean, and nasty. They have the best running back tandem in the NFL and a legitimate wide receiver in Amari Cooper. The basic only thing they're missing, Kevin, for Cleveland is a good starting quarterback, which Jacoby Brissett is not a very good quarterback in the NFL. Jacoby Brissett is an average quarterback, which, again, we're talking about 8 wins, Kevin. That's average in the National Football League. This is not a tanking organization. So it's not one of those where it says, hey, it goes to 7.5, they're going to win 5 games. There's way more talent on this roster. If they just hand the football off, they will win 5 games without even throwing passes. So I want to judge this based on what we get back, and you know how our minds work. The minute that comes out, suspension, 4 year for Watson, ha, everybody's out, and this drops to a 7.5, I might be interested on the Browns, to be honest with you.
It depends on the price. And I'm interested to see what they do with the make-miss playoff odds all of a sudden there. You're going to get a legitimate plus price on the Cleveland Browns. I would disagree. I think Brissett is below average, again, because I don't think he'd be anywhere near your top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL. I understand what you're kind of saying there, but that is below average quarterback play that they're going to get from Jacoby Brissett over the course of a season. But there are a lot of pieces around the Browns that I know people are high on. Last point here on Watson.
They are uncertain if they are going to play Deshaun Watson in this first preseason game. That'll be Friday night against the Jacksonville Jaguars. It's a 1.5 spread towards Jacksonville. I'm not going to ask you if you think he will play. Yeah. I think there's too many question marks around the entire game to put that question forward. Should he play? If you are the Cleveland Browns, if you are the Browns, you're trying to do what's best for your franchise. Is that putting Deshaun Watson out there for this game?
Yes, he's going to play. And quite frankly, Kevin, that the you try to read between the lines. There's no real gamesmanship in the preseason, which is why most teams go, hey, look, here's our starting quarterback. It's quarterback battle. We're going to have equal guys here. So you know what you're going to get. But when you're taking a look at Deshaun Watson, you're on this end. Don't you think they've already said, Kevin, he's not playing. He's not even going to be on the plane this weekend. Why would we give our starting quarterback, our franchise guy with $250 million, he's not going to play in the first preseason game. He's sitting this one out. The fact that they're basically saying, eh, we'll leave it up in the air, I do believe he's going to play in this game coming up.
I think that I'm not sure if he's going to play or not, but in terms of if I were the Browns, I am not playing him in this first game. I just think there is still so much going on right now around this team, around this situation. It feels a little unnecessary. The second game of their preseason is at home. I'd probably rather do it there. Also, you might know whether or not he is suspended for a full year of football. And if he is, you probably shouldn't waste any more time running him out there for preseason games. If I were the Browns, I'm waiting one extra week. We'll find out. A lot more NFL headlines for us to hit. Coming back right here. It's the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The Early Line is live. I want to circle back to Watson for just a minute. Look, occasionally you kind of hit on something, and it piques the interest of what we're talking about here overall. I do think part of the reason if I were in charge of the Browns, wouldn't want to start Watson is you might be able to find out whether or not this guy is going to be suspended again for 6, 10, 12, the year, whatever it might be, by the time preseason game number 2 rolls around. I think you can make a more impactful decision, a more accurate decision on how you should spend your preseason reps, whether or not it's going to be on a guy that's going to play some or no football for you. And you're starting to wonder now a little bit of what do they do if it is a one-year suspension with Watson? Is this guy practicing throughout summer? Or do they just send him home on his merry way?
It's very, you know, it's a tough call because the year-long suspension means you're not going to play in any games coming up in 2022, but you are allowed to practice with the team in the preseason, but not in the regular season, which is a real odd thing because if there's no chance to play during the season, why would you still be allowed to practice? But having said that, this isn't one of those where, hey, man, he had a tough year last year, played all 17 games, and, you know, he's going to miss this year. Okay, we understand it. The guy didn't play football at all in 2021. Sat out the entire season, barely even practiced with the team, basically would show up to the facility, watch 3 minutes of film, and just be off, I don't know, playing Madden or Nintendo Switch or just having some lunch every day. This is a guy that has to be engaged with his teammates and also still honing his craft. So do they, A, say, all right, you're suspended for the year, go home, relax, don't get injured, and we'll see you next offseason? Or do they say, you haven't played in a while, we got 3 preseason games, now we're not going to start you the entire way where you play 4 quarters because other guys need the reps at that position, but why would he not be playing at least a half over the next 3 preseason games? Well, you can't do that. That's your investment. You want to get him injured? Injured for what? If he tears his ACL, he'd still be back in plenty of time for next year's training camp. It's an interesting thing to try to bring up, but if I were the Cleveland Browns, I mean, outside of the PR hit that you would get, football sense says, hey, he needs to get some reps in here in the summer if he's not going to play the entire season. But at the same time, what's the look for the NFL going? We just suspended this guy for a year, and he's playing on national TV in preseason games? Tough look all the way around.
If he's going to miss a year, 2 series against the Eagles is going to be the most meaningless football of all time.
No.
Trust me, that won't make a difference for him. Let me just say this, though. You know how people love to do the whole, Does this draft prospect love football? Ah, this guy's got other outside interests here, this, that, and the third. At what point do people start to question the Watson priority? Because what did you just bring up? He played no football last year. By the way, he was okay with that. The Texans said, we'll pay you, you sit at home. And he's like, fantastic, no problem. This year, Donnie, the fact the contract that he signed with the Browns prioritized because he knew his suspension was coming, minimal impact to his bottom line, right? Let's be honest here with what we've seen from the NFL. If he was getting $46 million this year from the Cleveland Browns and an eight-game suspension was going to cost him north of $20 million, to be honest with you, he might only be suspended eight games. But he doesn't care. Again, I'm just, like, Watson's money is fully guaranteed. I truly am not sure if Deshaun Watson cares about getting back out there for the Cleveland Browns, because what indication do I have that he cares, Donnie?
You know, it's a good point that you do bring up, because let's remember, like, he didn't voluntarily sit out last year. And when they said, well, you don't show up, we're not going to pay you. I don't even care about the money. It's about principle. I don't want to be a Texan anymore. He got paid full slate to sit at home. And quite frankly, you see a lot of people that say, hey, you know what? Left my job here. They gave me a lump sum bonus where I don't have to work in the next year. Are you going out and working hard that next year? Are you just going to sit around and play Madden and golf and go fishing and relax? Hey, I get paid to stay home. Why would I work any harder? And you're right about this year. Is it a throwaway season? They get that with, I guess they splashed his bank account with like $40 million, but not a base salary. So he barely loses any money and says, I already got paid for this year, Kevin, right? What's the big deal here? See you next year, guys. It's a lot to go over here with Deshaun Watson.
There certainly is. Stick with the quarterback position and with a preseason game here. Steelers Seahawks is a very interesting matchup. It's in Pittsburgh. It is a 3-point spread in the Steelers' direction. The total here is a 36. And if you look across these games, it feels like a high number in some regard. Maybe that's because there's going to be some quarterbacks that you know playing in this game. But before we get to the Pittsburgh side of it, Seattle's at least told us that Geno Smith is going to be their starter. Though, there's been some conversation around Drew Lock in the build-up to this game that he has looked, for some people, quote, clearly the better quarterback, and he has had some first-team reps here. Geno is leading the field clearly, but this does feel like a very legit quarterback battle going on in Seattle.
Yeah, and rightfully so. When we talked about, you know, the Carolina Panthers and their quote-unquote quarterback battle, we thought it was Baker Mayfield from jump the minute they traded for him, right? But we never got that feeling where Drew Lock was going to be the entrenched starter coming over in the Russell Wilson deal. And Geno Smith does have some pretty good cachet in the building there because Pete Carroll likes him. And if your head coach likes you and trusts you, you're probably going to be out there with a legitimate chance to start. But this feels like one of the battles that is really open for competition. We'll get to the other team on the other side of the field, the Steelers, in just a few moments. But I actually like where this is going, and as we talked about to open the show, where's the competitive edge here? Because the one thing you do know is if two quarterbacks are battling for a starting job, now granted, it is the first preseason game. I'm not so sure if one guy gets a half, the other guy gets the second half, which would be the perfect scenario to take a team because you actually have legitimate NFL quarterbacks. Now, how good they are is debatable, but they've been there, done that before, playing a full four quarters as opposed to a sixth-round draft pick 3 years ago who only takes snaps in the preseason and gets cut after the second preseason game. So we'll see how it boils down to. But from a competitive advantage, if I'm looking to bet the preseason, Geno Smith, Drew Lock, I like this quarterback battle. I'm going to get at least a half of legitimate quarterback play with real play calls to give these guys both a chance to shine to see who can win this job.
And they should, because you don't owe Geno Smith anything. And moreover, while I don't believe there is a chance that Drew Lock is going to be a franchise quarterback and turn everything around here in Seattle, it's a higher percentage that happens than it does with Geno Smith. And I would say at minimum, it is more likely that you could get some good quarterback play out of Drew Lock that excites a team somewhere in the NFL. One thing where, you know, I'll set the stage for is I do think you have a lot of quarterbacks whose jobs are on the line this year, right? The guys that don't fit that description, your Pat Mahomes, your Josh, we know that they're going to be back right where they are next year. There's nothing to worry about. But there are going to be teams that are looking to fill quarterback voids next year, right? The New York Giants are an example that jumps right off of the page. A Detroit Lions could fit that description. And there's a bunch of others. The list goes on and on and on. I think it can honestly reach double digits. The Philadelphia Eagles probably fit that description as well. I'm not saying any of those teams are going to be running towards Drew Lock, but you never know who is left stood there without a quarterback. And if Drew Lock impresses, he all of a sudden might be worth something as opposed to worth nothing, which, not to be harsh, but in the trade market, Geno Smith is worth nothing to an NFL team. That is the truth of the matter. That's not a needle mover in any way, shape, or form. There was a couple of other NFL stories that came out yesterday. Some unfortunate news on Jets offensive tackle Mekhi Becton, who's going to miss a season. It's just been an up-and-down start for him in New York, which is so unfortunate to see. We also saw that Roquan Smith requested a trade from the Chicago Bears. This story is twofold here, right? Should the Bears pay Roquan Smith? And if not, which teams might look to potentially trade for Roquan? But the other side of it, and maybe the one to start with, is what this says about the Chicago Bears. The way things are laid out here by Roquan Smith, and if you're believing what he's putting forward, and I tend to believe that he is being honest here in his assessment of the Bears' offer, they don't seem to be very serious in their pursuit of keeping Roquan Smith. Nothing the Bears seem to be doing is very serious, at least towards winning this upcoming season. This looks like a group that is going to be getting some very real consideration as maybe the worst team in the NFL this upcoming year.
And I think Roquan Smith sees that as well, where you're saying to yourself, all right, in the NFL, you don't have that many years, particularly playing a, you know, defensive position like linebacker would be, or running back, let's just say.
Yeah.
But usually you can buy into the team equation, Kevin. If you have a good team and the outlook is good for 2022, if they were, let's just say, not the Bears, but were the Packers, and they had Aaron Rodgers on the Bears, say, you know what, Roquan Smith, we'll get to you here, but let's go out and see what we can do on the field. But if you are a football player knowing that the future is bleak on this team for the season, now what am I doing here? I feel I'm underpaid here. I don't think I'm getting the love from this team. And also, quite frankly, it's really interesting. Eberflus is a defensive guy. Usually they would come right over, hey, man, a quarterback on my defense right now, got to take care of the guy and keep him happy. So it seems like they're keeping him at length here, at least at arm's length. But if you're looking at the Bears' overall prognostication for the season, it doesn't look good. So I need to get paid. It's like we're talking about DK Metcalf. I need to get paid now. Why? I think we're going to stink this year. My quarterbacks probably will stink as well. But you know what's going to feel a lot better on week 8 when we're 1-7? Whoo, that paycheck every Tuesday is really hitting home right now. Thank goodness here. Roquan Smith's not feeling the love and showing up to camp every day, looking around left and right going, this team stinks around me. I better at least get paid if I'm going to be here.
The thing for Roquan Smith is, they got enough time here to possibly work something out. But if he is going to be moved, Roquan Smith is the kind of guy, Donnie, that probably comes in and starts captaining your defense. In the same way we say Garoppolo would want to be somewhere soon, Roquan Smith would want to be in his new location sooner than later. Pause on the NFL. We come back. Major League Baseball headlines. A lot of good stuff coming up.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Major League Baseball delivering in a major way yesterday in terms of some of the bets that your favorites here on the early line sent you to the window on, and in terms of some big-time headlines as well. I think the starting point's the Baltimore Orioles. Pair of games off of the Toronto Blue Jays. Right now sitting just a half game back of the Tampa Bay Rays. Just two games back of the Blue Jays for that top spot there right now in terms of the AL wild card race. Right in the thick of things here, Don. This team is, they're legit, man. They might just make the playoffs.
Yeah, stole one of their better players away, you know, dealt a dominant closer away, and here are the Baltimore Orioles. Now, as everybody knows, when I set the full rundown for the show, like I did again today, the Orioles sitting 6 games above 500, I saw that to myself. I said, I got to double check this. They're actually six games above 500 here and playing good baseball. It almost reminds me of the movie Major League, where like the ownership group was actively trying to tank the season for the Orioles, starting the season with very low expectations, winning during the regular seasons, climbing out of the basement and being around 500 at the deadline. And the ownership group goes, yeah, let's see this. Let's trade a few more guys away and see what you can do. And here are the Orioles, six games above 500, saying, take that front office.
So here is the thing that is a little puzzling to me. Right now, you look at the AL overall pennant, right? Plus 160 Yankees, plus 165 Astros. That's the top. Mm-hmm. The middle checks in, the White Sox, the Twins, the Rays, all 20-1. The Guardians are 35-1. And then the next team is Baltimore at 100-1. Here's the thing. Let's say Baltimore lands with that sixth and final spot. They're going to be then in a first-round matchup with the winner of the AL Central. It would be insane to envision a world where the AL Central winner is not the third division winner from the American League. Are you going to tell me that the Baltimore Orioles would have a zero chance to beat the Minnesota Twins or the Cleveland Guardians, who both right now share first place? I don't think you could possibly try and tell me that here. At some point, that Orioles number has to be cut in like half. I don't think there's any world that they win the AL. But here's the thing, Donnie. They have put forward a sample size of very good baseball now for a lot longer than bad baseball throughout this season.
Yeah, it's like any team can get hot over a 10-game period. Hey, the Orioles went 7-3. Yeah, well, they'll fold right back to reality with a 3-7 over the next 10 games. They do continue to play extended good baseball, which, again, caught me by surprise and maybe just about everybody else when you look at their record right now. This was supposed to be a team coming into the season where everybody in the AL East just beat them like a drum, and that's how you win the division. How many times you lose to the Orioles, that's probably the difference between winning the division or even making the playoffs. And now you've seen the Orioles as legitimate contenders. Maybe the Orioles this year are my St. Louis Cardinals of last year. They stink. They're not going to make it in. They stink. They're not going to make it in. And Kevin goes, now hold on here. Mm-hmm. There's only a two-team race here, and the Orioles are one of those teams in the race. Say, whoa, maybe they actually have a legitimate chance. I still don't think they make the playoffs because, quite frankly, I don't know how they're winning baseball games, but they are. They got some mojo working in that locker room because this isn't like, Kevin, hey, we just loaded up on the Pirates and the Nationals. You're beating teams that you have to climb over top of in order to get into the playoffs, starting with the Blue Jays and another 6-5 win yesterday by the O's.
Now, speaking of some mojo here, the Philadelphia Phillies are really one of my favorite teams to discuss. They have won 11 of their last 12 games. They beat the Braves in that 12-game window twice with one loss. It then involves four wins over the Pittsburgh Pirates, four wins over the Washington Nationals, and a win over the Miami Marlins. Now, you might be hearing this load up and think, oh, he's going to say the Phillies have beat nobody. No, no, no. Quite the opposite. This is usually where this team falls apart. A split with Pittsburgh, the Nats somehow win an Aaron Nola start, or yesterday, Zach Wheeler on the mound at home against the Miami Marlins with a rain delay. Somehow they start it back up, and the bullpen's just a complete and utter nightmare, and they find a way to lose this game 5-4 in extras. But no, the Phillies continuing to play very good baseball, DRS.
Yeah, usually the bottom feeder in this division is the Miami Marlins. And for some reason, the Phillies were never able to beat them or beat them like you should, win series. They would lose series when they're trying to gain momentum. And oftentimes, I've joked on Twitter, boy, if the Phillies could just replace the Marlins with the Atlanta Braves every game, they might actually make the playoffs, which is true. They tend to play the upper echelon teams very well, but the games you're supposed to win 3 out of 4 or 2 out of 3 in series, they would be the ones that you tend to lose. The fact that this has my head scrambled so much is because finally now, the Phillies are winning these series against teams that they're supposed to beat and beating them soundly, getting good bullpen work. And how about the lineup here for the Philadelphia Phillies? Post Bryce Harper has been electric over the last month. So Bryce Harper is probably going to come back to the team later this month and just be that sole DH, which is kind of interesting because his elbow never healed. But you're looking at these trade deadline acquisitions the same way you say, well, hey, great. Soto came into the lineup here for the Padres, right? But also on top of that, you're getting Tatis back, an MVP caliber player. The Philadelphia Phillies are doing this damage without the heart and soul of their team, the MVP of the National League, where he comes back into the lineup. That can only help here. The Phillies actually are built for a playoff run. Not to say once they get in the playoffs, they'll do a lot of damage here, but they're built for the long haul here in August and September. I'm starting to believe now where they have a one-game lead in the wild card race and things could go south in a hurry, and I understand that, but this team's given me more food for thought process of saying they might be a decent baseball team where they won't fold over the last 10 games of the season, where they actually have a 10-game road trip to end the season.
That'll be pretty interesting to see how they can hold serve there. You know, throughout baseball, there's obviously a lot of different things that can grab your attention because the slates are so big. There's so many teams that feel like they're in the mix right now. Usually we wouldn't spend much time talking about the Los Angeles Angels, but we've all grown accustomed to making those exceptions throughout Mike Trout's run and for Shohei Ohtani's run. Yesterday, Shohei Ohtani pitched six innings, gave up no earned runs, and hit a solo home run. That typically... When there was a point in time where that was lead story, and that was taking his odds to win MVP from plus 100 to minus 135. His odds to win AL MVP have never been longer. Aaron Judge is a minus 500 now to win this award. Ohtani grabbed his 10th victory this season. You see it there. It's Babe Ruth stuff that we are getting from Shohei Ohtani. But it really appears, with about 50-ish games left in the Major League Baseball season, he's not really in this race anymore.
And you talked about it, right? Hit the nail on the head. Nobody's watching anymore. Nobody cares about the Los Angeles Angels. Look at their record after that win. 48-63. You know what SportsCenter's talking about today? If the Angels are 63-48 and Ohtani was dominant on the mound, doesn't give up a run, 2-for-3 at the plate, including a home run, he leads SportsCenter. And quite frankly, even though Judge is having a great year, they're neck and neck right now because of the extra credit. We've talked about, you know, staying in the race. And oh, by the way, I saw Mike Trout was hitting off a tee yesterday. We'll see what that means. He's going to be back like next April at this point, because usually when Mike Trout progresses, we usually don't hear anything again from him. And quite frankly, bringing Mike Trout back this year with a sustainable or maybe a non-sustainable injury to finish the season just to get him some at bat seems a little bit crazy. But back to Ohtani here. You look at his ERA, Kevin. He's got a 2.68 ERA. He is pitching elite. He bounced back. Now, yes, everybody expects you to bounce back against the Oakland Athletics in Oakland. I understand that. But these are the games that you run to the window at the FanDuel Sportsbook to see how the odds have changed. Dominant performance and a home run, perfect scenario, and the Angels win. But again, Kevin, nobody's watching anymore. The fervor for Ohtani being MVP, and that's a good baseball team, and Mike Trout, and maybe they can get into the playoffs. That's up in smoke here. So I don't know what he would have to do to get back into the race, but if you're losing ground on a night where the Yankees got shut out versus the Mariners,
yes,
and you pitched a shutout and hit a home run and lost ground, that really lets the signs in the air right now. Looks like it's Aaron Judge's here at this point.
I think, and you asked, what does Ohtani have to do? I think he's going to have to just go absolutely wild at the plate. Like, all of a sudden start and find a way to finish with, like, 40 home runs. You just where what Ohtani needs to do, Donnie, is not only be a headline on the days he pitches. Because, again, that's kind of the thing we've talked about there. The MVP is not typically a pitcher's award. Ohtani, I'm not saying he's just a pitcher. He's going to have to start just going wild at the plate. You mentioned the Yankees. We probably should bring that game up as well. It was a rematch of Gerrit Cole versus Luis Castillo. Those two pitchers combined for 15 innings of shutout baseball. On a whole, this was a 13-inning game that finished 1-0. Look, there's a lot of takeaways here, but for me, it lands on two different sides. One, it shows that Gerrit Cole still, at his best, can be an ace. Gerrit Cole does have the ability to be a shutout pitcher. The problem for Gerrit Cole is when he doesn't have it, you are way behind the eight ball because he probably gave up multiple home runs in the first inning. But a great bounce back for Gerrit Cole on the road versus the very same lineup that took advantage of you in your home ballpark. But the secondary headline for me here is that pitch for pitch, bar for bar, word for word, Luis Castillo was the better pitcher. While it didn't really make a difference, this game was scoreless going into extra innings. I understand that. The Yankees ultimately made the decision to hold back on some prospects. Push forward on a Frankie Montas deal because they felt that the Cincinnati Reds were asking for too much in terms of a Luis Castillo trade package there. And maybe there's some validity to that if you're all about the prospects.
But I got to say, DRS, it's a little bit of a difficult sell if you're the New York Yankees, who are a World Series or bust baseball team, to now have seen Luis Castillo twice in a week and watch him be absolutely phenomenal for the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so much about even getting the pitcher, making sure he's on your team, but just blocking another team that might be in that playoff race that you might have to see down the line. And it does hurt extra here if you had two starts with Luis Castillo. And even though he didn't pick up the start, the win in both of those games, the Seattle Mariners won both of those games. So you sort of file those away where if these two teams meet up in the Bronx in October and Luis Castillo's on the mound, hey, man, I got the Yanks number. I'll be okay in this game. As opposed to, boy, the last two times I faced the Yankees, I gave up a combined 9 runs and we shelled early and never made it out of the 5th inning in either one of my starts. It's a good showing by the Mariners, but also very un-Yankees-like, right? Runners in scoring position, 0 for 10. Terrible base running here all throughout this baseball game, which continually cost the Yankees chances to score and pick up a win. It's very interesting to see where a Yankees team that is so potent, even though they were playing in a pitcher's ballpark against a good pitcher, 3 hits over 13 innings. That's unacceptable.
It certainly is. Let's do Padres Giants quickly before we make the move off of these baseball headlines here. There's 3 takeaways I think you could have from the Padres game. Soto's first Padre home run, Machado's walk-off, Josh Hader's struggles. Of those 3, which is the most important to you?
I got to tell you, the most important to me is Soto, we know, is going to hit. Manny Machado, we know, is going to come up big. And as long as they stay healthy, they're fine. It's the Josh Hader move at the deadline where he started to leak a little bit of oil. Maybe a change of scenery would happen. You know, pitcher's ballpark that he's going to be in. But Kevin should have given up 5 earned runs last night, and they would have lost that ball game. Josh Hader used to be the guy that came into the game, and you turn the TV off because you know your team won with Hader on the mound. Now you're tuning in, and maybe a late inning collapse is more likely the norm. As I take a look here, what is his ERA now listed? A 4.66 for a guy that had like 2.5 months of you don't score on me. Something's up here, Josh. What is it?
He is struggling. He was good in his first 2 appearances, though, for this team. We'll see how he settles in. To me, the big one, though, is Manny Machado. Because Hader is the only story, if not for that Manny Machado deep shot there. And it really is something that the Padres needed last night. We'll be right back. We'll close out hour number 1 next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back in a major way, talking some extra Major League Baseball headlines here, calling a quick audible. I think it has to be done because there was so much yesterday offered up from that slate. And Don, I'll let you take it anywhere you want, whether it was the Rockies smashing the Cardinals, a comeback win for the Astros, or the Dodgers continuing to just feel like they win every single game they play these days. What else caught your attention from the baseball slate yesterday?
Yes, certainly the Dodgers did, but I'll tell you what was an egregious loss yesterday was the Rockies and the Cardinals, 16-5. I mean, it just goes to show you good pitchers go to Colorado when they're the road team and just can't figure it out or get the right dial in, because Michaelis had some really good numbers over the past 30 and 60 days. And you say, hey, you know what? Cardinals need to hold that lead in the AL Central and see if they can expand it over the, this is the perfect game, let's go ahead and pound the Rockies. Not the case. 22 hits later and 16 runs. They were smoked in that game. And I got to tell you, this was my home run shots here with a couple guys from the Cardinals, Gorman and also Nootbaar, who were hitting rockets left and right off the fence. Come on, man. It's Colorado. Fly a couple more feet. Cash in some tickets for DRS.
Listen, you know what? It just couldn't be done. Although, if people listened to this show yesterday and we're like, oh, I got to pick a Cardinals to hit a home run, Donnie told people to bet De Young. So yeah, you helped make some people some money, even if maybe you yourself didn't cross the finish line. Another thing that jumped off the page to me, though, is the New York Mets. Again, this is just a horrifying team. I know they're playing the Cincinnati Reds. I got you. Carlos Carrasco, 6 2/3 innings of work after Bassett was fantastic in his last outing. Just gave up 2 earned runs, struck out 9 batters. Fantastic. Goes over the strikeout prop of a 5.5 yesterday. Continuing to get the job done. And also, you know, this Francisco Lindor season that if you only listen to local New York radio is an absolute nightmare. The 6th most RBIs in baseball with 79. Hit his 20th home run of the season. A little respect for Francisco Lindor. We're going Hard Knocks, bite kneecaps, Detroit Lions style. Hour number 2 is next.